This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, President Trump's pick for the Supreme Court cleared the Senate Judiciary Committee earlier today along party lines. The vote was 11-9. The nomination now goes to the full Senate, where Democrats appear to be preparing to filibuster Judge Neil Gorsuch. Arkansas Senator John Bozeman is here with the latest in just a moment. And Mississippi is defending religious liberty in the courts. Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant explains a little bit later here on Washington Watch. And speaking of religious liberty, FRC's director for our Center for Religious Liberty, Travis Weber, joins us from the Gospel Coalition Conference to discuss a new resource that can help you defend religious liberty. All that and more coming up on today's edition of Washington Watch. If you happen to miss anything on your way home, well, you can find it all later at TonyPerkins.com. We archive the programs. You can find it right there, TonyPerkins.com. Also, lots of other information resources available for you. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, the nomination of Neil Gorsuch to the U.S. Supreme Court is headed to the full Senate. The Senate Judiciary Committee approved the nominee on a party-line vote of 11-9. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell earlier today said Gorsuch will be confirmed this week. That despite the fact that Democrats are lining up in opposition. With us now is Arkansas Senator John Bozeman. He is a senator, represents the state of Arkansas, and works very hard on the difficult issues that are facing us here in Washington, D.C. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks so much for having me, as always.
Well, let's talk about this nominee, mainstream, independent-minded judge that has a favorable response from everybody, replacing Justice Scalia. But yet, all of a sudden, we see the Democrats lining up in opposition. What's going to happen here?
He's going to get confirmed. This is a gentleman. I had the opportunity of visiting with him last week, and he is, everybody agrees, very, very bright. His when he has heard cases, almost all of them have not been overturned. They've, you know, he has a tremendous record that way. Really, when you look down just through the judicial check boxes, he would score 100% with all of them. So he is going to get confirmed. I'm not sure exactly how, although my understanding is right now as we speak that there's enough senators that have announced that they actually have enough to filibuster him. If that's the case, then I don't think we will override that. If Gorsuch can't get confirmed, I don't believe a Republican president, particularly this Republican president, I don't think he can send anybody over that could be confirmed.
You know, I think that's a good point, Senator, because not that I always agree with the American Bar Association, and I don't think that there's the final word, but they're always held up by the left as being the ultimate in terms of grading right. judges. And he has the highest recommendation from the American Bar Association.
He does. And the other thing to remember, Tony, is this is the first time, if they go ahead and go through with it, that you'll have a Supreme Court nominee that's filibustered in a partisan way. You know, where just strictly one party is doing it. Now, you've had others that have been filibustered. But again, that's very, very rare. And it's always been Democrats and Republicans joining together out of concern. Again, this would be the first time that you had a partisan effort that way. So there's simply no reason not to confirm him, except for the far left is just really doesn't want to cooperate with the president in any way. And this has kind of become a litmus test for the Democrats.
Well, Senator Bozeman, don't we see a little bit of hypocrisy here? You know, like, for instance, Senator Elizabeth Warren, as recently as 2013, she, you know, chided Republicans, quote, and I'm going to quote from her. She said, quote, "We need to call out these filibusters for what they are, naked attempts to nullify the results of the last presidential election. If Republicans continue to filibuster these highly qualified nominees for no reason other than to nullify the president's constitutional authority, then senators not only have the right to change the filibuster rules, senators have a duty to change the filibuster rules," end quote. But and not only that, but Chuck Schumer, Dianne Feinstein, Dick Durbin, Patty Murray, Patrick Leahy, Ron Wyden, Jack Reed, Tom Carper, Bill Nelson, Debbie Stabenow, and others actually voted for Gorsuch back in 2006.
Literally, as you said, this goes on and on. And we had a senator come out and say that he was going to filibuster regardless of who the president nominated. So this is an effort to do the right thing, to try and get good people, on the Supreme Court. This is all about just politics, period. And so for that reason, I'm very, very pleased. I think the public's going to be pleased that Republicans are united and are going to do what they deserves to be confirmed. He's going to do a tremendous job. And if that involves the nuclear option, then so be it. But sadly, hopefully we won't have to go down that route, but it looks like we are based on what people have stated so far.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'll be candid. I did not think that the Democrats would want to go down this path. I thought they would be more strategic, and they would have enough to come and support this nomination and then fight on the next one.
You're right, Tony. A lot of people felt like because Judge Gorsuch is so well qualified, so well thought of, really just throughout all of legal circles, that they would not filibuster him, because once you change the rule, then it makes it a lot easier if the president came forward with a nominee that wasn't quite as stellar as him. It just makes it a lot easier to confirm judges in the future. So
well,
I think they're making a mistake in a big way. Again, this gentleman is very well qualified, but also I think it's poor strategy on their part, and probably will bite them in the future.
Yeah, I think it not only is he well qualified in every aspect, but this does not change the balance of the court. I mean, we're talking about the replacement
exactly.
for Justice Scalia, so it's essentially, it's just a trade. So the next one is where you can see.
And the potential is for somebody like Justice Kennedy to retire, and then you have a situation where you would profoundly change the court, and that if the nuclear option is done this time, will make it much, much easier to confirm its replacement in the future.
Yeah, so I from that standpoint, I guess I applaud their efforts in what they're doing, because I think you're absolutely
right.
Well,
it's sad, though. Again, this is the first time ever, and we shouldn't be in this situation, but, that's what we all ran on. I can't tell you the number of people that I reminded them you can replace the president in 4 years if you don't like him, but we're talking about a generational thing in this regard, and that's why you needed to vote for President Trump, because he came forward with a great list of people that he was going to propose to be the next justice, and sure enough, he's done exactly as he said he would do.
Well, Senator Bozeman, that's I guess the next question I wanted to ask you about that, because you campaigned on that. This, all the polling, exit polling, polling going into the election showed that this was a major factor in how people cast their votes in the presidential election. Do your colleagues sense that? Is that why they're so unified in the stand that they're taking on Judge Gorsuch?
I think they're unified in that regard, in that they did campaign in that manner, but also because he is such a quality candidate, it makes it so easy. But, yes, I think that was, in the state of Arkansas, certainly probably the deciding factor. It was a huge deal. And we also, in making it such that we did not confirm the person that the President Obama sent up, which was the precedent for the last 80 years, you don't do that in the last year, but said, let's let the American people make the choice, and I think everybody that voted knew that the president would send somebody over. The president-elect Trump would send somebody over that, again, instead of trying to create law, would look at the law as it was intended by what the people that wrote it intended to do, versus the feel-good, I'm going to do this because I think it's the right thing.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, Senator John Bozeman, my guest from Arkansas. Senator, one final question for you. You mentioned this, but I want to be very clear on this. You believe that Neil Gorsuch will be confirmed by week's end?
I Tony, if you were a betting man, and I assume you're not.
I'm not, but I will buy you. I'll buy you a cup of coffee.
For that year's pay. This gentleman is eminently qualified by every standard. In past Congresses, he would have no problems being confirmed, but we live in a very contentious state right now, but he will be confirmed.
Hey, I said last question, but one final question. You talk about this contentious atmosphere we're in. Do you sense that, you know, you were in the House, you came over to the Senate, been there a few years. Has things become more polarized in Washington, in your view?
They have right now. This is the worst that I've seen it. And, you know, you look at our nation's history, and it's always been, not always, but we've had periods where there was lots of contentions, people beating up others on the House Senate floors, all of those kind of things. But it is very, very contentious right now. And the country's divided, and the liberal base is very, very angry at the loss of the election, and they simply want the people that are in Congress, the Democrats in Congress, to do something. And because of that, they simply are not letting them cooperate at all. So that's the situation we're in. I think it'll get better as the year wears on, but right now it's pretty difficult.
All right, Senator John Bozeman, thank
you. And if we were doing the same thing, if Republicans were doing the same thing, they would scream the loudest.
Oh, yeah, without question. They certainly have. That's without question. But I do sense, my sense as well, and I've been here 14 years.
You've been around for a while.
I'm sensing that we have never, I mean, as you point out, I mean, we had a nation that was divided at one point, literally, and it went to war with each other. But I would say that, from my perspective, it's pretty tense right now, and it's very polarized when it comes to our nation. And I think what's happening across the country is reflected in Congress as well. Something for people to pray about.
It is, Tony. And, you know, I grew up during the Vietnam War days, where you had a lot of racial strife, lots of cities on fire, the assassination of the Kennedy brothers, Martin Luther King. Lots of tragedy going on, but people still had faith in their institutions. And right now, for whatever reason, we've lost a lot of that faith. And so I think that feeds into it, too. So
that's a great point.
It's not going to be undone overnight, but we certainly need to work on it.
That's a great point.
It's not to the country's advantage.
Senator, thanks so much for joining us. And obviously, we're going to keep a close eye on this as it unfolds this week.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, and thanks for your great work.
All right. Senator John Bozeman of Arkansas. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. You know what? This is a great reminder to be praying for our nation. I know we have our views and we want certain things to happen, but look, up here in this arena, it's tense. And these are real people, real issues, real families, the strains, struggles, challenges. You know, wouldn't it be great if, as a nation, we could move more toward getting along? I don't think we'll ever be unified, but as I think the senator made a great point, those institutions, those things that brought us together, have been deconstructed, making it harder for us to come together. All the more reason we should be praying. When we come back, the governor of Mississippi joins us to talk about the state of religious freedom in the state of Mississippi. Don't go away. We're right back with more.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted health care option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian healthcare sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable healthcare for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Judy Goodell and her husband set up a charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation.
What we love about it is that it represents stewardship principles that we feel strongly about. So we got very, very excited about this opportunity.
With a charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation, an AFA supporter can guarantee a permanent monthly income, as well as supporting the American Family Association for years to come.
We do feel convicted about really praying about all that God has really blessed us with. And so many people we know just want to leave it all to their kids. And we know the danger of that. And so we just are really just trying to pray through it. And God gave us great confirmation as we prayed that this would be a good use of the Lord's money.
Find out if a charitable gift annuity is right for you at 800-326-4543, extension 345, or email foundation@afa.net.
You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Monday afternoon. Hope you had a great weekend. So in the south, we had a lot of storms passing through yesterday primarily. A lot of rain. Brought back bad memories, all that rain. Almost immediately after the state of Mississippi approved House Bill 1523, Protecting Freedom of Conscience from Government Discrimination Act, a federal judge blocked the law. Well, today the state made oral arguments before a federal appeals court in favor of the law, saying that, look, this simply says the state cannot penalize someone because of their faith. Joining us now is the Mississippi governor who has been championing this law, and he's going to give us the latest on it, Governor Phil Bryant. Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, and you're absolutely right. It seemed as if even before the law went to the floor, You saw the left begin to attack it, begin to distort what the law actually said, began to use every type of intimidation and threats, threatening corporations that were here in Mississippi, bringing all the political pressure they could bear on the members of the Mississippi legislature, who I'm proud to say stood strong, and saying this is simply a law that would stop government, that would prevent government from compelling an individual who had, because of their deeply held religious or moral beliefs, the government or local political subdivision, such as the city, could not say, we are ordering you to do so, or you will be punished either civilly or criminally, or perhaps your business license will be taken away from you. So this is a controlling of government against religious persecution, in effect, and we are fighting now in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals there in Lubbock, Texas, making our oral arguments.
You know, it just seems like to me, Governor, that defending religious liberty sounds like the American way, in keeping the government from penalizing people because of their faith. I mean, something sounds like it's upside down.
It does, and you know, Tony, it is because I think a Judeo-Christian belief, because we've seen religious liberties and religious exceptions be offered to, I think, Muhammad Ali, who, of course, was a conscientious objector during the Vietnam War, And no less authority than the United States Supreme Court said, yes, Muhammad Ali has a religious exception because he is Muslim, and he does not believe that taking another life is the proper thing to do, unless, if I remember it at that time, unless approved by Elijah Muhammad. That was an exception that even he had. And here's a man who went into the ring in somewhat of a, some might say, a violent sport, boxing. And he said, but my Muslim religious beliefs would stop me from going to Vietnam and taking life in protection of my country at the order of my nation. Other exceptions we know at Guantanamo Bay where female soldiers are not allowed to shackle those that are being kept there, the terrorists or known terrorists at Guantanamo Bay. So we see the religious exceptions, except it appears as if it occurs with a Judeo-Christian belief regarding marriage. And then the federal lawsuits began, the intimidation, the threats, the political pressure brought upon everyone from those that are involved in maintaining collegiate sporting events to corporations.
You know, it does seem, Governor, that it's these political issues, these issues that have been, they're well, I say political issues, they've been deemed political issues. They're really moral, spiritual, issues of longstanding historical precedent. For instance, the abortion issue, I mean, that's relatively new, 1973, when the courts basically thrust this upon the nation, this idea of wholesale abortion. You know, it runs counter to natural law. Same thing, redefinition of marriage. 5,000 years of human history tells us differently. But because you believe that, all of a sudden, you have the weight of government coming down on you, trying to force you into this reconstituted view of a reconstructed view of marriage and life. And, you know, that's never been that way in this country.
No. And Tony, again, I see it as a civil liberty. You know, I have certain liberties. And as you know, when this government was founding, the founding fathers said this declaration and this constitution are there to protect your civil liberty so that the government cannot come in and enter your home without a warrant, so that they cannot arrest you without due process of the law, so that you have the right for public speaking, the right to public speech. You have the right to association. All these rights that you have these religious freedoms that are premier in those amendments to the Constitution and the First Amendment that says you have these religious freedoms that will not be abridged by in any form by the government. And so we are fighting for these civil liberties of that individual
right.
that has a religious and a moral
right.
position. You know, government all the time says we have such certain moral standards that we believe in. No, if you're agnostic, you don't believe in murder. You don't believe that another life should be taken by a criminal offense, for example. You might not believe in child molestation. You may say, look, I'm agnostic in that, but I know there's a moral standard that shouldn't allow those types of relationships with children, for example. You don't believe that one spouse ought to be able to physically abuse another one. And so there are all sorts of civil liberties that we have afforded people for generations, and again, religious exceptions happen to be one of them. And except in this particular instance, where I think you see the political correctness that involves this issue of marriage, it's trying
right.
to change completely the entire dynamic.
We're up against a break, but I just one final question for you, Governor. I mean, really, aren't those who are challenging this law that you helped get passed, aren't they really seeking to restrict freedom and impose their beliefs on others? Isn't that what this
is
all about?
That's exactly what they're doing. That's exactly. They're saying, I want to take away what religious freedoms Constitution may afford you, and I'm going to impose my beliefs upon your belief structure, and you must accept them or the government will punish you. That's what
Governor,
it comes down to.
I thank you for protecting the rights of people and this first freedom, the freedom of religion. Thanks so much for what you're doing in Mississippi.
Tony, thank you so much. We're fighting the good fight. God bless you.
All right. Take care, Governor. Governor Phil Bryant of Mississippi. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. We'll be watching that as the Fifth Circuit entertains those oral arguments. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about what you can do. FRC has a new resource helping you defend religious liberty. Travis Weber here next. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, home prices reached a 35-month high. Harley Davidson has been upgraded in their stock price, and manufacturers' confidence level is up from 40% to 93%. Now, what do they all have in common? Well, basically, they have in common that this is something that is driven primarily by consumers. Now, we saw off the chart consumer confidence numbers last week, and I would expect that that is going to continue. But these things really reflect an overwhelming abundance of enthusiasm and optimism about the economy. Of course, the real interesting number is the manufacturing confidence. Remember, this manufacturing number, confidence number, is coming on the heels of a kind of a 10-year meltdown in manufacturing. So that's very good news and gives us some insights to what might be coming. Of course, this week, we get ISM manufacturing numbers and we get ISM service sector numbers, probably even more important than the manufacturing numbers, since that's a bigger segment of the economy. We also get factory orders and we're going to get trade deficit numbers as well. Consumer credit number will be out Friday, but of course, Friday, the big number is non-farm private payrolls, expected to be down from a very good number last month, but nonetheless, we'll have to wait and see. In all likelihood, unemployment rate is going to stay the same. I'm curious to see who comes in out of the non-labor participation to participate in this optimism.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us today. All right, religious liberty, that issue is everywhere. In the news, current events. I mean, it is really at the center of almost everything that we are dealing with today, especially when it comes to public policy, but even beyond that, business. I mean, it's a factor everywhere. In fact, you know, as I was talking with the senator earlier, I've been here coming up on 14 years at the Family Research Council, and, you know, religious liberty was an issue. I mean, it's always been. I mean, it's the first freedom. It's something we care about, advocate for, work on, but it has become the number one issue. In fact, over half of our time, resources, and energy is spent on that issue. It's everywhere. And so you, I'm sure, are seeing it. You need to be a part of defending it, protecting it, using it, promoting it. I mean, we can't do this alone, and I know many of you out there are. And so as a result, we've actually produced a new resource that can help you in your efforts to defend and promote religious liberty. It's a new pamphlet. It's hot off the press. And here to talk about it is the author of the pamphlet entitled Religious Liberty: An Introduction to Our Freedom to Believe, and it's Travis Weber. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Now, Travis is the director of our Center for Religious Liberty. By the way, you're joining us from Indiana, right?
Yeah, in Indianapolis at the Gospel Coalition Conference, where we are exhibiting some of FRC's publications and materials, including the new pamphlet, educating folks and pastors on what exactly we do so they can engage on our issues better.
I would imagine there at the Gospel Coalition that religious liberty is certainly an issue of concern and focus, as it is almost everywhere, especially in evangelical circles. It was a major issue in this election. In fact, our exit polling showed that almost 60% of Trump-Pence voters voted for that ticket based upon their embracing of the Republican Party's platform on life and religious liberty. So, Travis, what What will folks find in this pamphlet, and how can it be helpful to them?
Yeah, so the pamphlet tries to hit a number of points that people can take with them into their workplace as they live their lives and just have these points on the tip of their tongue, on their mind, to better engage and share on this issue. One is simply, why is it an issue of concern? Why is it a flashpoint today? We talked about that. What do we mean by religious liberty? What's the essence of it in a nutshell so they can explain to people and know what we're engaging? And then, you know, we also talked about how they can remain a part of this, because some folks may think, hey, this is something for lawyers and people off in D.C. In reality, people need to understand the legal protection is only one aspect. Helping build a culture of religious liberty and a sense that it is right and proper to share our faith, to live out our faith, is just as important. Every one of us does that day to day. And so this talks about the importance of that, how people can do that, and addresses a number of other aspects.
So how can folks get a copy of this, Travis?
They can get a copy of it by going to our website where we have this, along with our other religious liberty publications. And again, this, as you mentioned, but just so folks have this on the tip of their mind, it's Religious Liberty Introduction to Our Freedom to Believe. And you know, this will be available on our website, and also we'll have it to distribute in hard copy form.
So, folks, you go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over, and you can download a PDF version of this, or you can order copies that will be sent to you in pamphlet form. You know, Travis, as we look out over the horizon here, new administration, Congress controlled by the Republican Party, both House and Senate, are you optimistic that we're going to see some retaking of this ground of religious freedom that was lost during the Obama administration?
I am optimistic. You know, I think, you know, this is something we have to continue to push for. People's plates are busy in terms of the pressing issues of the day, and sometimes we need reminding that, hey, this issue has not been dealt with yet. It's not going away. We need to deal with it. But I'm optimistic that, you know, we have people in place who care about the issue, understand the importance of it. Just recently we saw that, Secretary of State Tillerson has met with family of the imprisoned pastor in Turkey. This is the type of thing we need to be doing around the world on the issue and exhibiting the same type of attention to the matter domestically for those people who suffer religious liberty violations. We need to nip this in the bud now so that the folks here at Gospel Coalition and the pastors don't see these issues which are currently in the marketplace eventually end up at the doorstep of the church.
That's absolutely right. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us, and enjoy the conference up there in Indianapolis.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Travis Weber, director of our Center for Religious Liberty. And to get your copy of this new resource, Religious Liberty, An Introduction to Our Freedom to Believe, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can download a PDF copy free of charge. Also, you can order the hard copy, the pamphlets that come in little booklet forms as well. All right, when we come back, I want to give you an update. A lot happening on the topic of repeal of Obamacare. You know, some said that that was dead. Not so fast. I actually spent a good part of my weekend talking with members of Congress on this because I think it's so important. And I want to give you the latest on what may be unfolding this week and get your thoughts as well on whether or not you would like to see Congress revisit this and repeal and replace Obamacare. We're going to open up the phone lines here at 866-372-7234 when we return here on Washington Watch. So don't go away. We're coming back with your phone calls and comments here on this Monday edition of Washington Watch.
The love of one's country, that's what patriotism is, according to Noah Webster. You know the dictionary guy? Well, we're going to be being patriots when we go to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon in September. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. September 20th through the 24th, we're going to be seeing our nation's capital. We've taken thousands of people over the years to do this, and people sometimes come back for a second and third time. We're going to be seeing our nation's capital from a distinctively Christian perspective with historian Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation. Now, we're also going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown for those who want to do that trip. That's September 17th through the 20th. So those are two separate trips. You can do one or you can do both. We'd love to have you and your family. For more information, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com. Space is filling up. Hope to see you in September.
Join Norman Geisler, Richard Land, Michael Brown, Frank Turek, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Register by May 1st and receive a special gift. Visit ses.edu for details.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
8 Days of Hope 13 is headed to Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. Hi, I'm Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope is a faith-based ministry. We've gone all over the country to help families rebuild after natural disasters. We've helped almost 1,800 families rebuild their homes, sometimes from the ground up. Lafayette, Louisiana, and the whole state of Louisiana got hit by epic flooding last year in August. Almost 25 inches of rain fell, and almost $20 billion of damage was done. Literally 140,000 homes flooded. Think about that, 140,000 families waiting for somebody to be a glimpse of Jesus. You can be a skilled professional, or you can be somebody like me who's less skilled but wants to give back. Go to 8daysofhope.com. We provide the food and lodging, and you can learn a lot more about the ministry. And we can't wait to see you in Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
(866) 372-7234, the number to call to get in on the conversation on this Monday afternoon. Talking Obamacare, yesterday, President Trump tweeted out, anybody, especially fake news media, who thinks the repeal and replace of Obamacare is dead does not know the love and strength of the R Party. Now, he followed up by posting talks on repealing and replacing Obamacare are and have been going on and will continue at that time as a deal is hopefully struck. Now, it's not just tweets. The president was playing golf Sunday with one of the bill's biggest opponents, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. But, you know, more importantly than hitting the greens is saving the American people some of that green, like the greenbacks. That's what's really the focus of this, and that's what kind of broke down the negotiations between the House Freedom Caucus and the White House and the Republican leadership in the House. Their focus, and I think, you know, people now look at what they did, is they did their party a favor by stopping the initial plan, which, you know, did not appear that it had what was needed to bring down the health care premiums. Well, it forced them back to the drawing board. I've been talking through the weekend with various ones involved in this in leadership positions, the Freedom Caucus and others. And I think they may have found a way forward of reducing some of these health care costs, premiums. They're working on the language. Something should be out probably in the next 24 hours or so to give people a chance to look at it. But it's far from done. I mean, the president, the members of Congress understand this was a major issue in the election. I know there was several. I mean, there was the court. We talked about religious liberty, life, all those things, those policy issues being important. But Obamacare is kind of like, it's become one of those things, remember the Alamo. I mean, this is probably, there's nothing that better symbolizes what's wrong with government than Obamacare. I mean, you literally can say so much with that one word, Obamacare. nothing else needs to be said. And so they understand the importance of getting this out of the House onto the Senate and repealing it and making it go away. Now, I don't think we're ever returned back to a true pure market system, unfortunately. I mean, I just don't see part of the sticking point there is you have some moderate Republicans who, you know, for some reason like government engagement, involvement. And it's hard and difficult to manage a hybrid system. Part of the reason our healthcare system was in the mess that it was in is that we started down that path with Medicaid, Medicare. And so you had this hybrid of private and public, you know, government, free market. And of course, now that's under Obamacare, it's just total government entanglement. So would you like to see the House and Senate take this back up, repeal it, at least get rid of Obamacare before it implodes and come back with some kind of realistic, market-based, patient-centered healthcare system? 866-372-7234. And let's go to Oklahoma where Matthew is on the line. Matthew, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. How are you today, sir?
I'm very well. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you, sir.
Good.
I would love to see it repealed, and absolutely. I don't think, you know, the Fed should be in the business of this, but my thought and suggestion was that maybe the best answer would be just to give all free work, all pro bono work that doctors and hospitals do, give them 100% write-off on that, you know, so that they can take care of it. And then with you know, I guess the provision in there that they would not be sued for work that they do for those that they can't afford it. I think what we would see is if they would do that, you would not have any health care problems with anyone, and the government would not be in the middle of the mix. And I think people would be happy. They would be closer to having what we had, you know, before the government got involved, and maybe even closer to getting rid of Medicaid and Medicare. What do you think?
Interesting. That is clearly a component, is the whole tort reform. You know, we live in this litigious society where, you know, people want, you know, that's really crazy when you think about it, Matthew. People who are getting a free service, somebody is helping them, something goes wrong and or they don't like it and they sue. Now, I'm not saying that we it's biblical, you know, that you make someone whole if you do something malicious or to them. And so we have tort laws for a reason, but they've been abused without question. And so that is a part of driving down the health care costs. I remember back when I was in Louisiana in the legislature on the health care committee, and that was one of the issues as the states had more latitude in structuring policy. And I think that is one of the aspects of this kind of crafted bill is it puts more to the states in terms of block grants of this money and allows the states to set some of the policies, although a lot of the policies will come through the Department of Health and Human Services, but it still gives the states more authority and autonomy. But one of the issues that I dealt with back then was talking to doctors, and I had some friends that were doctors saying, you know, the insurance, the malpractice insurance I have to pay almost makes it not worth being in business. Not doing this. And some of it was that free service. They had to provide a certain amount of care to the indigent, and they were just part of operating out of the hospital, and they had to cover the cost of that out of their own pockets from terms of the liability, malpractice. Thanks, Matthew. Appreciate the call. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Texas where Sid is on the line. Sid, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Pastor Perkins. First off, I just want to say I've never been under the yoke of Obamacare, so I really don't understand all of how bad it is other than what you've informed us on. I just feel blessed to have that ability. But from what you've been explaining, the 2015 repeal looks like the best way to go about it, just from what you've educated your listeners on. And also, in terms of what the
Congress was doing. Was there any particular Congress peoples that you could inform us of that we can go ahead and call their states and encourage them to go ahead with this new repeal if they do indeed decide to go forward with it?
You know, Sid, a great question, and we will. When we want to see, you know, the old saying, the devil is in the details, and so concepts are one thing, but when you actually see the legislation, I am not a graduate of the Nancy Pelosi School of Government, where you pass it, then you read it. I think you should read it ahead of time. So we're working, having discussions conceptually over the language and seeing what it comes out to look like. And, of course, our primary focus, while I'm very concerned that this has to be something that reduces the cost of health care to make it, you know, practical, our primary concern is over the issues related to life and making sure that we protect human life. We do not force, as we have under Obamacare, taxpayers to be a part of funding elective abortions. And so that's been our primary focus, working with the House leadership and others to craft that language at the White House, making sure that language is solid when it comes to life. And I talked to the president about it. I talked to the vice president, and they were committed to that. And to their credit of that leadership, the first version was solid on life. We had some reservations about what might happen when it goes to the Senate, but we're looking at that again, working with them, and hopefully getting it to a point that we are going to see legitimate, real, tangible reductions in the health care cost. So, you know, Sid, even though you may not be kind of sucked into that Obamacare vacuum, we're all paying the price for it because of the increased cost of health care. I mean, it's risen dramatically since the government launched Obamacare. So it's the cost is being spread throughout society, whether or not you feel it directly, you are feeling it indirectly. Sid, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening. And we will identify some of those members that need some encouragement when we get to that point of knowing exactly what is before them. 866-372, going to work you, 866-372-7234. I'm talking over myself here. We're going to get a couple more phone calls here. Let's go to Louisiana where Paul is on the line. Paul, welcome to Washington Watch. Paul, you there? Paul. All right, let's go on to Arkansas. Let's go. Let's talk to David in Arkansas. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good afternoon, Tony.
How you doing?
I think, kind of discouraged, but I think they ought to repeal Obamacare for sure, because that's what they said they'd do. But as far as replacing it, I can't figure out how anybody in their right mind can think monkeying around with insurance companies and everything is going to make anything affordable. I had a stay in hospital for 3 days here a while back. When I got the itemized bill, there was the antibiotics they were putting in the IV and everything, which is probably a pound or less, was charged out at $739 a bag. If you want affordable health care, you're going to have get rid of regulations and stuff like that and everything that's driving up the cost of all this stuff. And that's what's going to make it affordable and get it down where people can afford the everyday normal stuff and everything. And if they want insurance, then they can get catastrophic insurance for long-term stuff or something else. Because the insurance, the way they're messing with it now, it's not going to fix anything because the cost is still going to be up there.
Yeah, and that was a major factor in the Obamacare structure where people were mandated to get it, and the insurance companies were mandated to cover everything. That's one of the big sticking points. It's called the community ratings. And what that is referenced to is that, it's just like when you get insurance for your car. You know, if you're a male age 18, you're going to pay more than a female that's 24. And just because of all the factors that are considered, the statistics, the analysis. Well, the same thing with healthcare. If you're a female and you're between, you know, 18 and 29, or whatever the age is, I'm just pulling that out of the air, but you're of childbearing years, you're going to pay a little bit more than, you know, say a male that's in that same age. Under Obamacare, none of that stuff can really be considered. And so that was one of the sticking points with the Freedom Caucus, is they wanted to see these provisions allowing insurance companies to look at the insuree with the one that they're insuring with greater analysis, so that, you know, those who have the highest risk would pay more. Now, that gets into the issue of the pre-existing conditions, which was a big part of Obamacare. So that's the big sticking point right now, is how do you make a system like this workable and affordable? I agree with you that when you interject the government into anything, you end up with a mess. And ideally, we've never even be having this conversation because we wouldn't have done it. But it was done. Our healthcare system is in pretty bad shape. Obamacare is about to implode. It's on life support. It's got to be dealt with, because it's not going to survive. You have all of these, and I understand it's complicated, and I think it was intended to be complicated. Anytime the government gets into anything, it complicates it. But you have to do something. Congress has to do something, because you have, right now, people are mandated to get it. You have insurance companies, the providers in these government exchanges, that are pulling out saying, we can't do this. We're losing money. It's not working. So the cost of premiums are going up. Insurance companies are losing money. Something's not right. And so Congress is going to have to act, or you could see the implosion of the, and you know, not the entire, but a large portion of our healthcare system. It's about one-sixth of the nation's economy. It's a huge aspect of our economy. And many, many people who were forced into this Obamacare system could lose their healthcare. And not of any fault of their own. It was because they were forced in it. And that was a part of the government, the Obamacare scheme, was to get all these people into it and then dare people to change it, dare Republicans to change it, because you have all these people. So it's a very complex situation to deal with. But they're working diligently to do so. And I'm optimistic that even possibly by week's end, we could see a way forward. But certainly a matter of prayer. All right, folks, going to be a big, big week. So we're going to have a lot happening in Washington, D.C. We got the Supreme Court nominee. Neil Gorsuch is going to be on the Senate floor. The Senate Majority Leader saying he will be confirmed. Possibly Obamacare repeal coming back. Yes, a lot. So you don't want to miss any Washington Watch this week. Until next time, the Apostle Paul says, you've done it when you've done everything you can do. When you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand. You got it. Just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.